I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vicky Patterson, The Secret 2. This week, I'm joined by the force behind the self-love revolution and the leader of self-love rebellion. It's none other than Lou Featherstone, a.k.a. Lou in Louland. Woohoo!
Woo! Oh, my God, I'm fangirling now. It's so embarrassing. I'm just embarrassing myself at this point.
don't, because honestly, before, obviously, we started recording, I fangirled you. So it's a two-way street, mate. Works both ways. I'm very grateful you've made the time to come on. I know you're a busy woman just changing the world, one leopard print spot at a time. So
I've got a lot to do, mate. The agenda is long.
She doesn't fucking stop. So for everybody who has been living under a rock, isn't aware of how fantastic and fabulous you are, let's go right back to the beginning, Lou. And obviously, I find your gradual sort of transition into this fantastic being that you are, I find it very fascinating. I want to know how you came to be. Because self-love, you know, accepting yourself, all these things, like, I genuinely believe it's not something we're conditioned to do. In fact, I think as women, it's the polar opposite. So I believe you were forged in the fires, but I want to know when that happened. So what was your childhood like?
My dad's a vicar, mate. My dad's a vicar. So maybe that says it all.
Did this happen in spite of him? Was it a really nurturing?
There was a bit of it. I think there was a bit of rebellion. I mean, I spent most of my childhood getting on the naughty table, Mrs. Havenhand's naughty table, or getting fingered at the choir. There was definitely, you know, I want to be noticed. And yeah. I think you and the girls, the Geordie Shorebirds, pioneered, you know, realistic shit for women. Honestly, you pioneered reality TV, and you girls were the first girls I'd seen on screen anywhere, like, being sexual and being okay with that and wanting it, and, you know, all the other things aside, that for me, you girls pioneered realness for me, and probably were the first time I sort of felt a little less ashamed of the fact that I was completely promiscuous and would have sat on anyone's face soon as if they looked at me, I'd have sat on your face in my teenage. I was a club 18 to 30 rep in Tenerife from Portugal.
But living the dream, girl. Living the dream.
But I always knew life was more about something. It was something more than just me. And so for ages, I thought maybe it was God because of dad. And then I thought maybe it was politics, but I'm not bright enough for politics, I don't think. And then it wasn't really till I found my voice around this sort of self-love message. But it was more, I spent most of my life doing what everybody else expected of me. First of all, I was the vicar's daughter. Then I was a wife. Then I was a mum. And I loved all of those things. But I tried to be perfect to do all of these things. And it broke me, really. It broke me trying to be a perfect parent, broke me, and just gave me postnatal depression because I was busy. I was so unhappy, but I hid it away. Even then, I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want to trouble anyone. You know, I put so much of myself away. And so it's been such a journey to this point of self-love. And it's still a journey. It's still sort of carrying on. But I didn't really find my confidence until around my mid-40s. I've been a terrible shopaholic for most of my life. I got myself in chronic debt. I'd stolen money from work and got fired. Like, yeah. And I reached a point where I was working for social services. I was working with families whose kids were about to be removed and put into care. And I was doing parenting skills with them. And I went out and spent 350 quid on a pair of shoes. And I woke up in the middle of the night just having a cold sweat going, what the fuck? Like those families who I worked with, that was like their monthly budget for life. Or, you know, and I'd gone and blown on a pair of shoes and I was so disgusted with myself. I gave up shopping for a year. Woke up the next morning and I went, right, I'm giving up shopping. My husband at the time was like, yeah, all right, whatever. But I did it. I set up a blog the next day called A Shoe Too Far and it was on Tumblr. And there was nothing on Tumblr except me and porn, I think. There was Instagram hadn't even started at that point. And I started doing Outfit of the Day. And I was one of the first people on the internet doing Outfit of the Day. My poor seven-year-old son every morning on the way to school had to take my picture. Which he absolutely hated.
Please tell me it was on like a Nokia or something.
Yeah,
as well.
Something like that. It was like old-fashioned Polaroid camera. So, but that year I started to have to restyle what I already owned because I couldn't buy anything new. So I found a whole new style. And with that, I found a confidence. And with like achieving a year of non-shopping, I found this little bit of confidence. And when the year finished, I was like, fucking hell, if I could do that, what else could I do? But I was also completely freaked out that this was the first time I'd felt confident. I found fitness that year as well, because I, you know, trying to fill the gap of the shopping. And then we moved to America. My husband's job took us out to America, which was super exciting. But again, it's, you know, I had a whole gift of this year where I wasn't allowed to work. I had no visa. So my husband had his big fancy new job. My son was busy at school. I got really fit and I started hiking and I found these badass women who are just so empowering. And Americans are just like, British women are like, you know, can think of 10 reasons why you shouldn't do something. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Americans are like, fuck yeah, let's go. You know, and they're really supportive. So when I came up with this idea to sort of like buy a vintage bus and drive around America preaching self-confidence, you know, British women, British people are like, well, I mean, have you seen the cost of petrol?
Yeah,
the traffic is terrible.
We'll give you the reasons not to do it. Yeah, I can see.
Whereas Americans are like, "Fuck yeah, here's some money. I want to support the mission." And
then you should run for president.
Yeah. Oh my god. But it's American dream, right? They're sort of, that's their culture. I also do miss a bit of cynical British people as well. So I ended up coming home. But yeah, honestly, hiking was such a game changer for me, and being surrounded by these empowering women. And I had met so many really strong, badass women out in America who just kept pushing me and pushing me. And I'm sort of searching around. And then my husband and I had really drifted apart. Well, I was busy finding my confidence. He was losing himself, I think, in a lot of ways. He really struggled with American corporate culture. I'm like, look at me at the top of a volcano. And he's like, yeah, brilliant. All right, that's great, love. Thanks a lot.
Oh, bless him.
I know. And then I hit menopause and walking into my power. I'm like, I can achieve whatever I want. And I just hated the fact that so many younger women, I realised how much of myself I'd put away. One day when we were climbing up a volcano, I took a naked picture of myself and posted it at the top of the volcano.
As you do.
And, as you do. And I got my very first dick pic. I'd never had a dick pic before. I'm so old when I met my husband. Like, we didn't even have mobile phones. You'd, like, photocopy your bum on the photocopier at work in the office.
That was risky.
At the Christmas party, and that was about it. And, but this dick pic made me feel horny. And I realised from this dick pic, and I hate giving the dick the power. I hate giving the dick the power. And if this guy ever listens to me talk about this, I bet he's sitting there like loving it. But don't. This is not an invitation for dick owners to be sending random pictures. Dick owners, keep them in your pants. Thank you. But this dick pic made me feel horny and made me realise how much of myself I have put away. And this sexual side of me that was so much part of me, when I met my husband, I'd sort of tucked it away. It wasn't a massive part of our life. Yeah. We were happy in loads of other ways. And I was like, well, you can't have it all. And, you know, we have loads to be grateful for. And I was like, hang on, there's life in the old girl yet. Yeah. And nothing ever happened with the dick pic. But I started to just sort of ponder.
It awoke something in you.
It awoke something in me. Not just my horniness, but also my, hang on a second, what else have I done? And that was basically the beginning of the end of my marriage. I moved into the spare room, not straight away, but I started to share more and more of my journey online and discover there's so many other women out there doing the same thing. And I can't bear the fact that I had lost myself so much in motherhood. And I just think now, God, if I'd found my voice and been able to ask for what I needed and what I wanted, I'd probably still be married. And instead, I sat in silence thinking I was martyring myself and my husband and my kids. And then the more I put out online, the more women came to my door and started going, oh, my God, you know. Yeah. And I'm not extraordinary. I'm just a normal woman with a big mouth who shares her shit out there to make other women feel not alone or inspire them to maybe find their voice or love themselves a little bit harder. Because I just think if you show up for yourself, you show up for everybody else. We think it's selfish. Yeah. Actually, you're showing up for everyone. That old thing, you know, you've got to put your emergency mask on first before you can save anybody else. That old freaking cliche is just my favourite one. Cause...
No, but it's right, mate. It was one of the first things my therapist ever told me, is that you can't pour from an empty cup and, like, you need to put yours on first. Mate, I mean, obviously, that question was simply, what was your childhood like? And I do... No, never apologise. Like, I feel like I could listen to you for hours. You're articulate and intelligent and funny and inspiring, and I loved every single second of it. But what I took away from that is it felt like when you were younger, you were full of rebellion and a really, you know, a desire to not be what anyone thought you should be and, you know, find who you really were. And kind of that stopped really fast and you went into being like, a wife and a mother and all of that. What changed? Because it seems to me like you're back on that really rebellious, owning who you are, very strong and inspiring path. But there was a period where you lost yourself.
I mean, I think, and this is not, the irony of this is not down to my husband. This is nothing he did wrong. It was me as a woman trying to be a good wife. You know, I played this amazing game. We moved down to Brighton and he commuted up and down to work for London. And he would get home probably around the same time as I was putting Oscar to bed, and I was knackered and I'd had my own day at work, and he'd come through the door. And I played this imaginary game of how long will it take my husband to ask how my day was, you know. And I'd sit in silence. I'd be like, he walked through the door and I'd be like, right, start the clock. I mean, I didn't. It was the imaginary clock. Yeah. And I just sort of sit there. And some days it would only take 5 minutes for him to ask me. And sometimes it was an hour and a half before he'd fucking stop talking about his own day. And he never even did get round to asking me. And instead of just saying to him, I really need you to ask me how my fucking day was because I've had a really long shit day. I don't know why I couldn't do that, because I didn't want to upset him, because I thought, you know, he'd had a hard day. And so I didn't want to make it worse by going, actually, I've had a really shit day. And so I just sort of shut up. And I shut up and I shut up. And I think that started with the postnatal depression, just learning. I just sort of like shrunk myself down to keep quiet. I mean, now I look back over the last few years, it's hardly surprising I burst out of a volcano naked, screaming, no. Look at me, I'm back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is almost like a phoenix rising from the ashes. That's what it's giving, you know? And it's understandable. Do you think... You've probably got a better idea of this than me, given like how many women you talk to and stuff, and how, you know, your journey has inspired them to come to you and chat. Do you think that's really common? Women shrinking themselves and, you know, being what they think a man needs or what they think society wants them to be?
Yeah, exactly. 1,000%. And I think the more real I am, the more appealing it is to women, I think. And I think that's, you know that. It's hard putting yourself out there. Yeah. People are judgy and they look at you, you know, and they look at me naked ass, or they look at me, you know, running around naked roller skating, and they want to make all these judgments on you. But, you know, I'm the extreme. I always say to everybody, your road to liberation beyond this imaginary rule book that we have is up to you. You know, you might not choose to stand naked on top of a mountain or leave your husband on a vintage bus and drive around America.
You've got to find your version of that.
Got to find your version of that. And it's I don't think I ever gave myself a minute to understood how I feel, to understand how I feel or find my voice. Today, an episode of the podcast has come out about boundaries, and I'm just still listening to myself going, I just thought a boundary was telling someone to fuck off rather than being able to ask for what I needed. Just like, oh, and I didn't want much. I just wanted to be included in the partnership. I just want you to ask me how my fucking day was, or bend me over the kitchen table and bang the shit out of me. Like, I don't know. It just blows my mind that I couldn't find my voice and how much simpler and easier my life could have been if I had just done that rather than, you know, bursting out of a volcano.
No, but I think if you suppress a side of yourself for that long, Lou, like, the only way to go is... It only is an explosion, you know, it is. And it's like anything, if you, you know, if you, you bottle up your feelings, if you hide who you truly are, like it explodes everywhere and covers everybody in tiny little pieces of Lou. So I don't think you, is there ever a part of you that wishes you had just had the conversations or you really convinced this version and this journey was yours?
I think this journey was, this was my destiny, I think. Yeah. This is my path. This was the thing that was my calling, if you like. And I love the journey and I love the way I'm doing it. It's very me. It feels authentic. I've got nothing to hide. I'm all out there and I kind of love that. There's something to be said, and you probably appreciate that, on just being yourself and being real and owning it all. You know, I own the shit bits of me, and that's been quite liberating. Even though, you know, did do it, it sort of happened by accident and gradually, and going on this journey and taking everyone with me, you know, I love it. I love that I don't have all the answers. I'm not an expert. I'm not Mel Robbins. I'm not Brené Brown. I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not telling you what to do. But I am surrounded by some real badass, inspiring women. So I like to, you know, that's the best bit about the podcast, is bringing in other people's wisdom, you know?
Yeah. But we're not expected to know it all. Like, I think that's one of the main things you learn as you get older. Like, we're all just winging it, you know? And it's a good thing you're not Brené Brown, you know? Because she already exists. You're Lou Featherstone. You're doing a fucking very good job at it.
Oh, you're amazing. I think there's something to be said for just having these conversations, you know, just having these chats out loud. I mean, when I had postnatal depression, there was no Instagram. There was nowhere, there was no mum out there going, this is shit, you know. And I remember when I started working for social services, and I worked loads of young teenage mums, you know, and when I first meet them, I'd go, it's really fucking hard, isn't it? And they'd be like, oh, you can't say that. You work for social services. And I'm like, dude, it's really hard. Being a mum is the hardest, shittiest job you're gonna get. It's really, really hard. And do not expect it to be great every day, you know? And I think that's why I was so good at that job, because I was just real with people. You've just got to be real. And I just think, you know, social media is so full of so much toxic positivity and so much toxic bullshit. You know, it's so powerful just to be honest. And it's nice getting dressed up and being all glamorous. And, you know, I can tell you the key items to wear in your wardrobe if you really want me to. But, you know, I think there's life's messy. And that's part of the joy. That's the secret to it, right? Is enjoying the shitty bits and the tricky bits. And you're not going to stop them coming, but having some tools to deal with the shit when it comes.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I was looking there when you were talking. It's so weird that you bring that up, because I sent my sister this little meme yesterday, and I do love social media. Like, I think it gives people a platform to tell their side of the story. It gives you the opportunity to be, like, you know, authentically you and positive and all the rest of it. But, like, predominantly I love it for memes, I'm not going to lie. I love it for memes. And I sent this to my sister yesterday and it says, me, I'm tired. Women everywhere, just enjoy the time with your kids. It doesn't last. Me, I said, I'm fucking tired. Not that I hate my children, Janet. I'm allowed to feel things. And, like, it's so important. Like, so often my sister goes to me like, I am absolutely shattered. And, like, mm-hmm. I know she doesn't want me to say, like, you're doing a great job. Like, you, Maeve's only little once. Like, appreciate these times. She wants me to say, I bet you it's fucking really hard. Are you okay? And, like, I think that's like the way our mindsets are changing as women, and, you know, the way we're sort of kind of coming round to this idea that actually you can be a mother and you can be a busy woman, you can be all those things, and you can complain about it and still be grateful. I think that's healthy.
Mm-hmm. I do too. I think it helps another woman as well. I think I'm just about to fly to the States this week to do a TED talk of all things.
Can you believe you're saying that, Lou? Like, I'm just flying off the States to do TED Talk. Like, that's fucking big shit.
What the heck's happening? I've launched a podcast on Global and next week I've got a TED Talk. I'm like fucking dying. But at the end of the TED Talk, this is a sneak peek to the end. I'm like, when one woman sets herself free, we set another one free. Like, if you just by showing up for yourself and setting an example to our kids, because the kids are watching, our kids are downloading from, especially the girls, but also the boys. Like, yeah. You know, I'm showing Oscar what, you know, so many couples stay together for the kids. Yeah. Well, what are you teaching your kids by doing that?
I know.
You know, you're not teaching your kids that, you know, you're teaching your kids this sacrifice is everything. And it doesn't mean it's not hard, and it doesn't mean it sucks, and it doesn't mean it's not really the most brutal thing to do, and it's expensive, and there's a gazillion reasons not to leave. But also, you know, you've got to show your girls and your young boys that this is, you can find another way to parent, not necessarily in the same house if you don't, but putting up with shit and putting up with, you know, unfairness and cruelty and mean and, you know, I don't know, I just think being realistic in life is a much freer way of living.
Yeah.
I always...
No, go on, please.
No, I was going to say, I let my son watch... One of my top parenting tips was letting my son watch reality TV. We watched Geordie Shore together when he was probably way too young for it. And he'd sit and watch with his mouth wide open. He did not very well with that. But Love Island, things like that. Like, he's learned quite a lot from all these shows. And I always thought it was quite bad parenting. And then I met the lady who devised Love Island last year. I went and did some stuff. I went and worked at Flagstock. And I met the lady who wrote Love Island. And, you know, she said the whole point behind the show was that they wanted people to take accountability. There are so many people getting ghosted on dates and ghosted on social media. That the whole point behind Love Island was making people take accountability for their behaviour and having to confront that the next day. And I was like, oh, it so works. Oh my God, my son learned so much from reality television. It's not parenting tips.
How do you feel raising a son in today's society? Because I was talking to someone the other day. It was my personal trainer, actually, and he's got a little boy. And it's really important to mention my personal trainer is the most emotionally intelligent, kind man you'll ever meet. Like, whoever ends up with his son is going to be a very lucky woman or a lucky man. And yeah, I was said, like, we were chatting about it, and he says, you know, we're creating this generation of women, quite rightly fucking so, who are telling them all the time, you can do anything you want. You are brilliant. You are amazing. You need to sit in your power and let everybody shine. Like, do you know what I mean? We're raising this incredible generation. And he says, I sometimes do worry about, like, what that says to the boys. And, you know, that's what's bringing this rise of, like, the Andrew Tate type,
yeah,
phenomenon, you
know, toxic masculinity.
Yeah, and I think there has to be another way. Like, we can tell boys all the same lovely things, you know, without saying, like, women are beneath you. So how do you feel raising a boy in this sort of society today? Because I feel like I'd be a bit nervous.
I feel more confident raising a good young man. Yeah. I'm so...
A dick owner.
Only because I remember how bloody shady and naughty I was. So I don't know. We've always had a very open dialogue. And that, honestly, I know I'm sounding like I'm fangirling again, but that's just thanks to reality TV, that watching that together gave us a really open conversation, like opportunity to have open conversations around sex and things like that. So my top tip is always, again, with social services, with parents, with teenagers, was like, you have to have these conversations with them, because they're going to smoke weed, they're going to shag, they're going to finger the girls, they're going to get pregnant, they're going to do all the flipping things
they're very busy.
They've got all of this social media pressure on them. They see way more than they should. So the only parenting tool that you have is the fact that you want them to come to you when the shit goes down.
An honest line of communication.
Honest,
that's all I would want, you know. And my mum really tried with that, Lou. Like, she did the beat, to our credit. And I think back then as well, because I'm 37 this year, like, that was probably quite, you know, like, pioneering, you know. It was probably quite rare. And she did the best she could, but I think she was always the mum who was like, if you're going to have a drink, I want to know where you are. So come back home, no matter what state you're in, you know. And subsequently, being all my mates would be there.
But you were safe, right? You were safe, because otherwise you'd be in the park.
Well, exactly, yeah, or in a field somewhere.
Here's a condom. Come home and shag her downstairs, because I don't want you to do it in the park and the condom split in. I would rather you were safe, and you're gonna do it. He's gonna kill me if he ever hears this. I don't know if I should tell you. Oh, I'm gonna tell you. Sorry, Oscar, if you ever listen to this, I'm really, really, really sorry.
That escalated very fast.
I know, because I was like, oh, he's gonna kill me, but I think it's worth telling. This is how fast things escalate. So we went camping with some family friends, and he started seeing one of the girls. We've been family friends for years, and then all of a sudden he started dating a girl from the other family. And we were going for a camping weekend, and he was like, can I share a tent? So me and the other mum are like, what the heck is going on? Do we let them share a tent? Like, they've always shared a bedroom, because they've grown up from like 10. Uh-huh. So we were like, okay, fine, you can share the tent. Anyway, I didn't sleep all night. I was pretty much pacing around the tent trying to listen, see if I could hear anything. The next morning, I was like, oh, God, do they look like they've slept together? Like, what's happened? So he came over and he went, Mum, can we go for a walk? And I was like, oh, God.
Oh, no, but that's so nice.
I was like, okay, all right, keep cool. I was like, be cool, let him just do the talking. So we go for a walk, he went, let's go for a walk along the river. So we go for a walk along the river. And I went, look, whatever's happened, you just need to say it to Mum, just get it out, just it'll all be all right. It's just much better, problem shared, blah, 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 blah. So he just turned around, he looked at me, went, how do I kiss her?
Oh!
I was like, oh, God, I had visions of what you've been getting up to all night.
You had them doing reverse cowgirl in the woods, and all of he wanted was a little tash on.
He didn't even know how to kiss. He went, how did you learn to kiss? And I went, well, I used to pay Auntie Janie to practice on it. Also, don't Google it. I mean, just go in with some confidence. Just, you know, practice on your arm. I was like, how do you teach your son how to kiss?
I don't know, mate. It's over my pay grade, that, definitely. I always got told the washing machine method.
Ooh, what's that?
Like, you just stick your tongue in someone's mouth and wiggle it around like a washing machine going around. As you can imagine, I was really popular with that technique.
Really popular at school, me.
Oh, it's such a rite of passage, though, isn't it? And you forget, like, all of those lovely feelings, like, scary ones, but really, really nice things you have to go. It's nice that he's got you there.
1 week later, he started high school. I get a call on the Saturday, he'd been at high school 5 days.
Yeah.
I get a call from my mum, he'd been caught smoking weed, and the next day he needed plan B because Roxy thought she might be pregnant.
Within a week.
Within a week.
That is a very fast escalation, even by your standards, surely.
I'm like, wow, son, that was the fast track to the plan B.
Jesus Christ.
So, but keep the line of communication open.
Keep it open. And I think that is best advice for anybody raising kids, anybody wanting a healthy relationship, just like anybody at all. Me and Irk really working on that at the moment. We're getting married this year. And I know somebody told me really recently, you know, those people closest to you, the people that you love, they often, unfortunately, get the worst version of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about Irk and I, and, you know, I show up at work, whether it's heart or a photo shoot or telly or whatever, and I'm this bright, shiny, best version of myself, you know, wanting everybody to walk away thinking Vicky Paterson is hardworking and kind and made them feel like they were important too. And then I come home and I'm tired and I'm exhausted from that, and he gets this agitated little shell of a person, and sorry, I'll get upset. Made me really sad thinking that that was the version of me he was getting. So yeah, so we've made like a conscious effort to show up as like there's my best self for him, and you know, try and talk better and communicate better, and it's made so much difference.
Do you know what I think? You know, you remember your parents going, "All marriage is hard work," and you're like, "Oh, all right, whatever." But then when you're in it, you're like, "Oh shit, it really is," and it does take work. And you know what I realized is I was the woman that used to go, "We do not need to go on date night. What the fuck? If we need to make all that special effort for ourselves, we don't love each other." And I have backtracked the shit out of that now. And Valentine's,
that's very big though. Like, to be able to say, you know, I was probably a bit wrong on that. Like, that's growth.
I often call him. I have these epiphanies all the time, and I ring up and I go, "Oh my God, that was so shitty of me. I'm really sorry. Actually, now I realise that was not great." But I also hated Valentine's Day. You know, people hate on Valentine's. Oh, you know, I shouldn't need a day to remind myself. Sometimes you do just need a day. Like, and I think if we had gone out, if we had gone out on date night, maybe we would have had a space to be able to have hard conversations.
Have those conversations, mate, yeah.
You know, and him be able to say to you, "Do you know what? You're showing up really shitty. I need a little bit of shiny Vicky as well," you know? Yeah. Or, you know, I could have said, "I need you to ask me how my day was," or, "I really need banging over the kitchen table," or, you know, but we didn't.
Sherry wouldn't have minded hearing that one, to be fair.
You know what? And if he did, we could have addressed it, maybe. When we were going through a really bad patch, that when I was playing the imaginary game of how long will he take him to ask me how my day was, I did start going to the therapist. And but I mean, even that says it all. I went to a therapist because I was unhappy, so I assumed it was me. You know, I didn't even think to ask him to come with me and go, "We're having problems," or, "I feel unhappy, we need to address things." I went by myself because it must be my problem. And I had the worst therapist ever on reflection. She said to me, "Well, maybe you should turn the TV off and listen to him when he gets in. Give him 15 minutes and just let him talk and let him speak and let it get it off his chest and turn the TV off." And I was like, "Right, okay." She went, "Make him a cup of tea when he walks through the front door." So I went, "Okay." So I was like, "Try not to be resentful. Make him the cup of tea and listen to his day." So I did. For ages, I made him the tea. And then I spent the next few years going to people, "Oh, you should just listen to your husband and make him a cup of tea and it'll all be great." And of course things perked up because I just shut up and made the tea and listened to him talk. Like, what kind of dumb advice was that? So if I ever gave you that bit of advice, I really apologise because it was a huge error of judgment. You know, get him to make you a cup of tea and tell him how your day was. There's got to be something in the middle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I think if anybody's listening to this and sort of feeling like they're showing up in some of the potentially passive-aggressive or, you know, quite toxic ways we've mentioned, do you have any advice?
Go on date night. Go on date night.
That's a cool bit of advice.
It's like, it sounds so lame, but it's tricky. I know it's tricky. You're tired, you're broke, the kids are in, you know, getting a babysitter is tricky. But making that space for each other, you know, and don't force a shag when you get home. It doesn't have to be that, but just make some space. My mum and dad said their secret to their marriage was having a hobby together. And I do
think... What was
their
hobby? This sounds really cute.
It's sailing, but they had the most fun adventure sailing together. And actually, it was a really good tip. And they, you know, I don't know. I think I had an interesting journey with them. I think I grew up thinking their marriage was perfect. And then one day when Oscar was about two, he was a right little shithead. My dad wanted to take him on the steam railway. So we had a little picnic basket packed like the railway children and off we went for the steam railway, you know, granddad taking his first grandson. And Oscar was a little shithead all day long. Tantrums, no granddad, throwing shit around. It was awful. And we got to, when we got back, he threw the most almighty tantrum on the platform. And my dad sort of said, that child needs more discipline. And I went, fuck you. You know, my husband at the time was working away loads. And I was like, fuck you. I don't have a perfect marriage. I'm trying to do this by myself. You know, I'm trying to hide postnatal depression, not tell anyone how I felt. I'm like, fuck you. I didn't have a perfect marriage like you two. So crosswords were exchanged. Mum and dad went home. 3 days later, there's a knock at the front door and it's mum and dad standing on the doorstep. We want to take you out for lunch. Go out for lunch. My parents then spent the next hour telling me how they were not the perfect marriage at all. My dad went, do you remember when I went on that silent retreat to commune with God? Well, your mother had left me for a month. I was like, what? Oh, crikey. Okay. And they were, but like, we're your parents. Like, why would we tell you we're having an argument? And I was like, but I just thought, this was my blueprint, right? Yeah. I thought, I never saw you argue. So from that day, I was like, there's gotta be a way to be a realistic, show my son a realistic vision of marriage. I don't want him to grow up thinking it's all perfect. I want him to see us disagree or argue, but still love each other and figure shit out.
Ultimately end in like some sort of like, you know, a happy, healthy resolution. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, because otherwise, if I think, you know, I'm trying to achieve this perfect bullshit that doesn't even exist, making myself ill, making everybody ill. I mean, I cried for 2 years, Oscar cried for 2 years, we all cried for 2 years, you know.
But if you do, if you just hide everything and act like everything's all right, you kind of perpetuate that cycle. Like, Oscar goes mm-hmm. off thinking the same, like, marriages have to be perfect, you have to shut up and put up with it, and, you know, and it's not nice, is it?
And boys, I realised, I did, I went to do, done loads of talks to women's group, and then I got invited out to this thing called the Do Lectures, which is a bit like TED Talks, but in Wales. And they have a beautiful farm, and it's a weekend of inspiring lectures. And they invited me to do a talk, and I was talking about what it's like living life online and sharing my shit out there, you know, putting it all out there, making myself vulnerable. And when I stood up to do the talk, I looked out and I was like, shit, half of them are men. And I hadn't really given it much thought. I was so focused on talking to women. I was like, well, the talk's the talk now. I've written it. I'm here. So I did the talk. And at the end, for the rest of that weekend, it was men. It was men that wanted to talk to me about how to show up better for their wives, their girlfriends, their female colleagues, their daughters. They're like, how do we be better? How do I get more vulnerable? What should I do? And that weekend, I was like, shit me. Men have their own toxic rule books and their own imaginary things that they don't know any more than we do. I think women have found their voice, especially through the Me Too movement, and social media has really helped us sort of find our voices and find our people and, you know, find our expressions, whereas men are really trying to catch up. And so from that day, I try really hard not to just men shame, because I think when we're with women, we're like, it's really easy to go, fucking men, or it's stupid men, and, you know. But I hate it when men do that about women. I'm like, don't talk, you know. So
there
I try
is such
really
a double standard, isn't there? And I can't believe I'm saying that, because honestly, Erkan goes mad. He's like, you're such a feminist. He throws it around like it's a dirty word, Lou.
I try to bring men into the conversation, because if we don't get them to help to understand, especially around the menopause, for example, or, you know, if we don't find our voice, they don't know. We can't just blame other people if you're not, you've got to speak up for yourself. It's just got to start with you. All of this has to start with you, and understanding how you feel to be able to ask for what you need and what you want. And
I know. And you know, mate, it's so hard, because I think we're constantly made to think, you know, a sign of a strong woman and a sign of a good woman is like, you know, being strong and silent, putting up with it, doing it ourselves, like managing it all. And that's absolutely what I was made to believe. And it's only been in recent years I've been diagnosed with PMDD, Lou.
Oh, I know.
Talk about it nonstop. Everyone must be sick with the back teeth. But the hundreds of thousands of women I've got in my DMs being like, this is me, and I'm in my 40s and had no idea, you know. I'm going to continue to bang the drum. But like, somebody said to me that I'd the most important, because I was like looking for ways to deal with it, and people were looking to me for ways to deal with it, and I was aware I was really inexperienced and unqualified. And someone said, you need to help the people around you understand it.
And I was like, when you share that, they share that, they tell the mates at work, they tell the girls down the pub, they go,
Yeah, and like even me fella, I'd be like, Eve, he's got like PMDD now, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And like he can talk and he can tell his mates. And I suppose like you feel really angry and like resentful. You're like, why should I have to explain mm-hmm. this? Like I'm the one going through it. But actually, if you don't, nobody's got any idea what you're going through. So yeah, you need to understand yourself. You need to accept it. And then actually you have to in turn educate others so they can support you and show up for you in a way that's right. And you know, if we don't explain it to men, they're not gonna get it.
Exactly. So that's why I'm out there just like, bleh, hearing all this. Because I mean, I think when I think back, Me Too, the Me Too movement, when that happened, that was the first time I realized my sexual assault that I'd experienced wasn't my fault. 30 years. But just hearing other women share their stories, I was like, oh my God, it wasn't my fault.
And that's then a long when time I. to carry that around, Lou.
And then. My struggle with money my whole life. You know, whenever I did podcasts, I always said, oh, I'm terrible with money. I'm a shopaholic, but I never talked about stealing money from work, for example. I was sort of like, kept that a secret until I went on Dawn O'Porter's podcast with a million listeners and blurted it, chose that podcast to blurt it out.
You're going to do it, girl, do it right.
I mean, go for a million listeners. Why do it with somebody who's 35? But In me sharing that shame, that huge, probably one of my darkest shames, my direct messages have never been busier with other women sharing their shame with me. And that then set me free from that shame, because I'm like, again, I was like, I genuinely thought I was the only person stealing money from the joint bank account, you know, all these shady shit, all these secret credit cards I had squirreled away. You know, it turns out I'm so not as bad as half the blooming women in the country. Everyone's got their shady shit going down, you know? But the power in that of just being real. It's nothing magical. But yet somehow we live in a world now where being real is our magical thing. Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it? But it is like being open, being honest, being authentic, just being real. It's kind of everybody's superpower.
It's the power that's the power we have. You go and look at my fucking stomach. I've ripped Dirk's head off this morning. I'm like, you know, I want to kill someone.
It's just taken verbatim for my Instagram because it sounds like it is.
Yeah, pretty much. Half the country go, oh my God, thank God. You know, so I'm prepared to put myself out there and be vulnerable. If it helps another woman to then help another woman to help another woman, it's like there's no such thing as sort of one-way liberation. It just all goes round. People are always like, thank you so much, thank you so much. I'm like, no. Trust me, I get as much out of this as you do, and it goes round and round and round. So, yeah, I don't know. And men have to be included in that. The more we push them away and blame them and put it all on men, the more we get, more we divide ourselves. So we're almost causing it now. Although I will say we are deserved a little moment. You know, I'm not too interested in white middle-aged men moaning about their bad lot. Sorry, guys. It's really somebody else's turn.
We've all got our limits, Lou. It's been absolutely lovely to talk to you in part one. I can't wait to chat to you in part two.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.